anytime.
Control where the food was.
Okay, looks like we have everyone here. And so we'll go ahead and open the Boulder Town Planning Commission public meeting, or regular meeting, business meeting, regular meeting for March 12th. And we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heck, I don't really need to recognize anybody. You just put them down, right?
I'm sorry?
I don't need to recognize anybody. You just put the names in yourself. Okay, thank you.
You might say the
date. I did. March 12th, 2020. Okay, so we'll go ahead and I assume everybody's looked at the February minutes, and does anyone have any comments about the February minutes? Okay, so we'll go ahead and I make a motion to approve the February minutes. Thank you.
I second that motion.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So the new business, we generally start with public comments. If anyone has any public comments to add or begin with. Okay, so we don't have any public comments, so we will go ahead and turn the time over to Curtis, and we have a conditional use presentation for Sugarloaf Valley Farm. I need my glasses. No, managing for sales prospecting.
What are the computer one?
You'll see on the plug on the back of it.
What? What is that? HDMI.
Yeah.
Look. Okay. Source HDMI. No signal. Oh.
Got it on the screen. I'm not sure what else I need to do. Should be just directly connected to what I see through my screen.
USB connector, and then plug in the USB. for an HDMI thing like that.
I got chipped by Amazon.
No, you've got two on this side too.
HDMI.
Yeah.
This is the one Elizabeth uses at school, so I'm pretty sure it works.
Do you have to pull the phone? Can you get pull the phone on your computer, Matt?
Before.
Yeah. Well, magic power on and off thing.
Yeah. Joseph, do you have yours up on your computer?
I've got
the sugar loaf now. Because I have mine. Cookie, you've got yours.
We can share.
Is this where it is right now?
No, I don't know what that's all about.
I know what that is. That's one of them right there.
This is too dear.
Hey, I've got enough if you want to pull the HDMI cord over here.
And this is the sugar one.
Oh.
I think they're two different places. Could this get tough?
Where'd you get all that?
Oh, this was from last time.
Okay. Do you want the application first, or so you want to be on it?
See, this is this is one of them.
So what dot do you want up first?
That's fine. Just
yeah.
Yeah, it's fine.
Oops.
Okay, so basically what it is an application. They have an existing conditional use permit. Testing. Yeah. So they have a conditional use permit for 3 guest units, varying size, 1 large, 1 medium, and 1 small. And now what they want to add is 2 tiny houses just to the south of those, just basically adjacent to the big house, right behind it. And that'll show up on a picture here. So they're calling it units 104 and 105, the existing 103, and 101, 102, and 103. Okay, so yeah, that's... Well, that's just basically a narrative showing the 4th unit. You can see there 104 and 105. And the tiny houses are 350 square feet each. They have a ways to go with them. They had these pads poured there that they thought they might use for employee housing at some point, but now they decide to dedicate it to this. It's 350 square feet each approximately. They have a ways to go in terms of a building permit or anything if they're approved. They have to take the wheels off. They have to satisfy code for putting it on a foundation. Otherwise, it's a trailer, and that wouldn't be an authorized use. So they take it off. They put it on a foundation as approved by the county inspector and code. They have the drawings that came from the factory with all the electrical drawings, and then they have to wire it from the main over to the house according to code. Same with plumbing. Let's go on over. Yeah, there we go. So this will show you 104 and 105 where they're projected to be. And then about where it says 104, they've already put in a septic tank last year and drain field. Separate, so it's not joined onto the other septic. They got a permit for that. They've already done the work and installed it. There it is. There's a picture of it. Okay. So that's one of them, and they haven't purchased the other one yet. So, and they want to get approval for two of them. And then there's their septic permit. And like I said, that's already been approved and installed. So, Donna, if you want to take over from there.
We don't have much else to add. And I'm open to answer questions. Does anyone have any questions?
Does that pass that to us?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
I'm just here if anyone has any questions. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to do my best to answer. And everything I know basically is on the presentation. But I mean,
okay. What did you want from me?
I do have a couple of questions.
Go for it.
So,
go ahead, Josie. Anybody that has any questions for Donna, just feel free to ask her.
Okay. This is directed to the planning and zoning. So this is a 39.4-acre lot. There's three single-family dwellings on the lot, and this is zoned GMU. So it's zoned for one single-family dwelling plus an ADU at this time. Now, these were built in 2002, I think, when Robinson came in and redid that area. And I haven't looked up the history, but I'm assuming that these are legal non-conforming uses of three existing structures. These, right? Well, we have three single-family dwellings on one lot in GMU right now. And I have the lot. I mean, I do have the parcels printed out, so that is a 39.4-acre lot. Okay, so now we're proposing, or the proponents are proposing to bring in two additional single-family dwellings. So that would make a total of five, and we're not zoned for that to be able to allow five single-family dwellings.
Well, on a 39-acre lot?
It would have to be subdivided. Or, as you process that, there would be another option, because we do have in our subdivision ordinance a cluster development, and we could look at that.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of going down the wrong road here. This is a guest ranch, and so it would fall under a different classification than the zoning ordinance or an ADU. So they're not really ADUs on a lot. It's a guest ranch on either a 39-acre lot or a 500-acre lot, depending on how you want to view the range. So what was approved was three units as a guest ranch.
Okay, but so the guest ranch definition does not override our zoning. It is a use. It's not a developmental specification as far as density and zoning. And so use is different. And yeah, we did approve the guest ranch, and there's not an issue with that because it's approved. And like I said, the three existing structures on there are most likely a legal non-conforming use, or a legal non-conforming structures, actually. But when we're looking at adding two additional units, those are, in the definition of a single-family home, these are two separate dwellings. That doesn't fall within the zoning. But like I said, we do have a cluster. You know, there's in chapter 1000 in our subdivision ordinance, that's a way that we could have them look at that because, I mean, they have 10 legal lots, and they're all contiguous, Sugarloaf Valley Farms. That's just the 10 down the south end of the valley. There's 10 contiguous lots. There's a lot of flexibility there on how they could do a cluster development. So I'm not saying that, you know, this is no, but it needs to be done correctly.
I'll be happy to do a little more research, but my first inclination, having just heard this, I think the general rule is that when you have something in the table of uses, like a guest ranch, which is clearly a commercial enterprise, that it doesn't follow the same rules as the subdivision ordinance.
It's our zoning density.
All right. You're mixing residential zoning with the commercial use. So I'll research it, but
I think so.
My first inclination is they're apples and oranges, but I'll check it out.
Want to say anything, ask anything?
Yeah, sure.
I'm under the impression we have 600 acres. We have a separate ranch, deer ranch, but the other land is all contiguous. I'm not sure you're getting 39.
Because you have legal lots on record. Okay.
They are all under one tax license. It's one entity. It's one piece of property. I don't know that. I will have to research this. I'm just trying to understand. It's the first I ever heard that there are separate pieces of property there.
They have different parcel numbers.
I will want to call the county and see how many different tax parcels were being taxed on, because I know up at Hills I wasn't allowed to do a subdivision that had already been done, because the county forgot to give us two parcel numbers. They only gave us one.
Yeah, you have 10 right now. Parcel numbers, according to
parcel numbers. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that's a good thing. Though that gives you, you have things subdivided down there according to this parcel there.
The reason they're wanting to put these two tiny houses where they are is that there's already existing pads.
Yeah.
So they put the septic in because the pads were there, the utilities were there. Plus, it is sort of clustering. We're putting everything in one area and leaving all the ranch area open. So we thought that was a good thing.
And I think that's a good thing, too, but we just need to make sure that we're following, dotting our I's and crossing our T's and doing this correctly, because as proposed, it does not comply with our
zoning. It looks that way to you, but no one has done. We have to do the research.
Okay, read the zoning ordinance.
Well, yeah,
Let me research it. We don't need to, there's no point in speculating back and forth when we don't know yet, but I mean, if in fact your take on that was true, there's other easy solutions too. I mean, all they'd have to do is join it to the next large parcel.
Well, not necessarily, because it's a limitation of how many dwellings per lot, right?
Yeah.
And so anytime that, in the history of Boulder, and anytime that somebody wanted to add a mother-in-law house or something, they had to subdivide, because they could not put two dwellings on one lot.
Until
now we have our
ADU.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'll look into it.
Okay. That's all I have.
Any other questions?
Just a general question. Do they, or do you, have a general plan of your development, what you're going to do in the future?
Well, for the future, you're looking at what the plans are right now, and there isn't plans for any other development right now on that piece.
So you're just kind of doing them one, going
actually,
oh, this is good?
Actually, the tiny house from up there it was, where we thought it was legal, because we were told that we would be better down there. So we moved it down there thinking there would be no problem. We've been going through this process for quite a long time, and we already tore off all the structures that were on there and disconnected and moved. And so this is all brand new to us. We have no idea this is going to be a problem.
I'm the bad guy on that.
So I have a question, too. So you're using the word tiny house, which we don't, I love the word. I've been wanting to see it come up, and same thing with table of uses. I don't know if that word has come up. As far as it being the property, looking at it as a guest ranch, you'd almost want to call it something else, like a guest house or a guest. Does that matter as far as the definition?
No, tiny house is just a common designation. Just call it a little house, tiny house, small house, little bit of lumber, whatever.
Right. We actually have a name for it. It's called the Blue Heron Highway.
Right.
Yeah.
And when we take off the wheels and put it on a platform, it will be a house, just a small house.
Yeah.
Okay. They had already hooked it up over at Hills and Hollows, and I was over there and saw it. And I just I called Sean and said, you're a commercial lot here. You're treating it as an ADU, advertising it through VRBO or Airbnb. And I said, number one, it's a trailer, it's on wheels. And number two, you don't have a conditional use permit for a motel. So, and you can't have one for a VRBO or SDR. So, And he thought about it and agreed, so they moved it over there to add it as a guest house unit and go through all of the coding and make sure it comes up to compliance, take the wheels off, put it on foundation. Otherwise, they would have had to go to get a CUP for a conditional use permit for a motel unit behind the store. So that's the history on that.
Curtis, do you have the definition of a guest ranch? I mean, you've got some other stuff going there.
Go to G.
There it is.
There you go.
It's a guest ranch.
You still have to comply with guests being in your zoning. Just a quick little overview of if you did decide that cluster development is how it's going to fit. I'll just go really quick. This is where you're going to find it. What it would typically, I need to do some more research in here, but typically what you would do is you would designate open space and there would be a conservation easement on that open space so that it can no longer be developed.
There is
and
actually, referring back to your question, I forgot, they have been considering doing some conservancy work.
Yeah.
That is a long process and we haven't done it yet. And we do have our plans. We have that in working cattle ranch and we intend to keep it in working cattle ranch. We're working with several people, local people who are developing a local cattle business. It's right within Boulder's general plan.
Yeah. Good.
So does anyone have any other questions? Because we're actually just looking at this tonight.
Yeah.
It's just
a pre-look, so you can think about all these questions.
We want to look at having a public hearing next week. Is that what we're looking for?
Next month.
And is that what you're ready to move on for next week to have a public hearing?
Well, I don't know. It depends on how you all feel about what has been presented tonight.
Okay. All right.
If you feel like we can,
right?
Fine, but I don't see that much.
Okay.
I think we need to wait till we do some research on it.
Yeah. I'm just saying that this is where we're moving on down. The next thing we're looking at is
so the next one would be next month, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We do have people scheduled because we thought this was going to be our first. We will have to cancel reservations.
Well, you still have your public hearing. You have every right to have a public hearing. And if they raise objections and the research turns out differently, can affect their decision. But, you can still go forward. Yep, you're entitled to the public hearing. You're entitled to make the application under the ordinances, and we have to follow our ordinances.
Well, we do have 180 days from the time an application is made, so.
Yeah.
So you're saying
there's
you
time.
Could have a public hearing in 2 weeks, and the
I don't know. I mean, I'm just looking at what we're moving forward to. I just wanted to voice that as far as what we're moving forward to.
And then would you have presented the information that if we verify or disverify, you all make a decision then?
They can make a decision then, or they can, they have to make a decision on a reasonably expeditious manner, but you can go ahead and have your presentation. You can go ahead and have your public hearing. You're entitled to that. And then we've all, they have to puzzle out this one question they have and any other questions that come up and hash it out and take a vote. That's the way it works.
Does anybody have any other questions? Okay, thank you,
Donna.
Thank you.
Thanks, Curtis. Can you get back to Mike then? Okay, so now we have a presentation for the Boulder Mountain Guest Ranch.
Is that the lodge or the guest?
Yes.
The lodge. Yeah.
Oh, well, I wondered why I was so confused. Boulder Mountain Lodge. This is not the Boulder Mountain Guest Ranch. This is the Boulder Mountain Lodge.
Did I put guest ranch on there?
Yeah. It was like, why? Oh, my God. No wonder.
Okay.
So it's for the Boulder Mountain Lodge. And Curtis, are you presenting with this, or is Susan, or?
I'll just give you a rough overview, and then Susan can
okay.
do whatever she wants to do. That's testing, testing. Testing, testing, testing. Hello? Okay, the Boulder Mountain Lodge has 20 units at present, and they are applying for another duplex out in the middle there. They, about 5 years ago, they did one duplex off to the east side of the property, and now between the office and that duplex, they're applying for another duplex. That'd be two units. And yeah, I have this kind of organized so sequentially, too bad we can't get it out, but if you yeah, just go through the attachments, we'll figure it out. Okay, there's the letter from, okay, that's a good one right there, that map. That's just the, that's, yeah, these are two good ones. Okay, so the square out there in the middle, it shows an access coming around that tree. The, just to orient you, the Bird Trail is in the upper right diagonal. The Highway 12 is in the lower right diagonal. So there's the entry in the office, and then there's the large lawn area. Right there is the road in through that, around that tree actually. And then that's parking where it says P, and then there's the duplex unit right there. So, and there's the one they built 5 years ago right there. So it's smaller than that one, but it's still a two-room, kind of a small suite, the way they described it. They have a letter, that's the one just above that. They have a letter from the Department of Environmental Quality because Southwest Health deferred to them. The local rep felt that she wanted the big boys up in Salt Lake to look at this, and so Dave got a letter from them because when they did the duplex unit in 2005, they upsized their wastewater system, their septic system and drain field. And so they had that on file. And at the time, they anticipated doing this. So they upsized it to take care of and got the approvals at that time. And so their septic part is taken care of. Let's see, what else do we have here? There's their tax notices. There's three different tax notices. And I guess on three parcels there. And then this is their cut sheets. And this shows all the code compliance. I mean, that's kind of long, 18 pages of stuff. All their drawings that they'll need for a building permit and Garfield County, but it basically shows all commercial code compliances which they'll have to do. So, and it's like I say, it wouldn't be on for a public hearing until next week when we have enough notice to get it advertised. So, but I, since they got it to me, I wanted to send it to you and give you a chance to start mulling it over and familiarizing yourself, and then we'll do the public hearing next. If they want to go forward, we'll do the public hearing next month.
So
do you have anything, Susan?
Yeah. Just one correction. You said we had 20 rooms. We currently have 22 rooms.
Yeah.
So this will make 24, and that's the total that he ever wants to have on that property. It's pretty maxed out there. In 2012, we were going to build four units, and the town was at that point kind of on the verge of losing the transient room tax, and so he cut it back and built two in a hurry so that the town could keep that transient room tax so they'd still qualify. Now he wants to go ahead and build the other two, and that's all he ever plans on building is 24 is the total. So, I don't know a whole lot about the building, but Sean might be able to answer questions if you have questions about the building itself. But I just wanted to know that we do have 22 rooms already, and this will make 24.
Thank you, Ryan. Get confused these days.
Yeah.
That's what it said anyway. Does anyone have any questions, any comments?
I don't know if you can answer. So the engineering group gave us approval letter for the septic, but during the building permit process, they still have to go through that checklist of having the septic inspected, or is that?
They told us we didn't need to. Okay. When we were going to build the 4 units before in 2012, he just built it, I think they built it up big enough for 30 units, because he just wanted to have enough capacity so that we don't have issues. So I think they built it up enough for 30 units, but 24 is all the plans on having. The guy told us we didn't need to have it inspected, but if you guys want to, I guess we could do that.
I was just wondering more on the process, because your application is complete, but you still have to go through the building permit process too, so
right.
The septic would have to check again, so.
I think because they just applied for a building permit to do some remodeling over on the kitchen, and they submitted the same letter to Southwest Health when they got their building permit through Garfield County, and that was acceptable to the representative Sandra over there.
Anyone have any comments? Any questions? Okay, so we're looking at having a public hearing next month on this. And I'm just saying that, because that will be on the agenda. I mean, it's something that we'll be putting up on the agenda. Okay. I keep going back to my agenda, sorry. So, the next item that we have is an update on the table of uses work group, and Matt and Josie, oh, thank you, Josie, I didn't see that. Matt and Josie, I'll leave that up to you.
So, we just met before this meeting, and I think it's our third meeting, and I think the boulder's finally starting to roll downhill rather than uphill. We sort of figured out the best way to get at the definitions, and we covered a big chunk this evening on campgrounds and resorts, RV parks. It looks as if our trajectory will be probably finalized in June. We'd like to do it sooner, but we're dealing with 50 different definitions and 7 or 8 people trying to solve those definitions, and some are big. So, but I'm really positive about it, and I think it will be a great document to present to both the Planning Commission and the Town Council. So that's about it.
Josie, what did you think of that webinar today? Did that help at all with what you're doing?
I don't think it really crossed over into what we're working on.
Okay.
But I thought it was a worthwhile webinar.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's, does anybody on the panel have any questions? Doesn't look like it. Okay, so now we're going to have a discussion on deed restrictions. Josie, we talked last month about bringing up deed restrictions because it seemed like a topic that needs to be talked about. People seem to be favorable as far as bringing the word deed restrictions more into our ordinances, the general plan. I think Josie showed where it was in the general plan. And so, now I need to look at this for a minute. Josie, do you want to talk about, because you have a piece of paper,
right,
basically.
So taking last month, our chair and vice chair, suggested that we do look at carrying forward language into our ordinances and our applications that would require the deed restrictions or covenants or any agreements were checked before moving forward on a proposal. We've already talked in depth about who has the right to enforce those, but a municipality can require an applicant to make sure that they check those before moving forward. And in a conditional use permit, according, you know, to our presentation by Peter Higgins from Garfield County, he said that, you know, if there was a conflict there, that is a reasonable reason to, you know, put a conditional use permit on hold until those issues were worked out. So that doesn't put the enforcement back on the town. It just makes sure that it doesn't get slipped through the cracks. And, you know, we've discussed these conservation easements a lot in the history of Boulder and how it can be used in our planning and as things move forward. It's in the general plan. So after that last month, I went back and took another look at it to see what does that mean? Where does it follow in? And so I came up with a few suggestions. So one, in the general plan, it's in one of our goals that we talk about looking at maybe density credits or incentives for developers to preserve, you know, our open space. And it's suggested that such the open space should be permanently preserved by deed restrictions or conservation easements with the local or town-approved land trust. So that's where the language ties into our general plan already as taken care of. And then I also mentioned here, as I was rereading our subdivision and zoning ordinances, that we do actually have that chapter 1000 that talks about cluster subdivisions, and it would fall, this type of thing would fall into that as well. So what's the next step? And these are just suggestions. So after I'm finished, I guess everybody can pitch in. But
I was going to say, does everybody have this in front of them, or were you guys all able to see that?
Okay.
I was just making sure everybody had been able to see it.
Okay. Yep. So in our zoning ordinance in Chapter 8 under conditional use permit, site development plan requirements, there's a checklist of several things that have to be considered for conditional use permit. There's 1 through 10, and I won't read them all for the sake of time, but this covers like your parking, the location, the stormwater plan, what needs to be on your plan as far as where the locations are, service impact assessment, things like that. So all I suggest is that to add another item, number 11, that says that all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions are a part of that checklist. That's it. In the subdivision ordinance, section 400, under your preliminary subdivision application, under 4 title reports, so a title report's already been required for subdivision applications, that they have to pull the title, right? I would just suggest adding language to that. So right now it says a title report for the property proposed to be subdivided, provided by a title company direct to the town, and including all abstract pages within 30 days of the date of the preliminary subdivision application. I suggest adding all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions must be disclosed. Okay? That's it for that one. For subdivision ordinance section 500 is your final subdivision application. And in this one, it's section 3, title report. It's the same language as above, except for it says, if the final subdivision application is filed with the town clerk after 180 days from the date the preliminary subdivision application is approved by the town council, a title report no older than 30 days shall be provided as part of the final subdivision application. And I suggest adding all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions must be disclosed. Okay, and then the next one, now, so that takes care of the 2 ordinances that I think cover all of the underlying ordinances. So if we get it in the subdivision ordinance and the zoning ordinance, we're covered. Now we move to applications. So we have an application for subdivisions, your preliminary subdivision application, again, is your title report. Exact same language as what's in your subdivision. So I won't read that again. And the same goes for your final subdivision. Same language. Okay? Then we have a conditional use and site plan application. And again, we have that long list of everything that they have to have on their application. And I suggest adding item number 10, disclose all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions. For your permitted use and site application, you have a list again of everything that you have to have. And number 4, I suggest that you disclose all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions. And then on your building permit, applicant must complete a building permit application form. and when applicable, provide evidence of, there's a list, A through G, and then I suggest adding H, which is indicate the deed restrictions, if any, otherwise applicable to the real property on which the dwelling is to be located. Or, an alternative, we could say the applicant has checked for any property-specific information, such as deed restrictions or restricted covenants on the property. So I mailed this all out to the Planning Commission, and it can be put in the record. And that's all I have.
Okay. Excuse me. So the thing is the thing that I was going to suggest is we just got this. It came to us, and I did get a chance to look, got my stuff out, and I looked at all of it. But I want everyone to be able to go through the zoning ordinance and look at how she's changed this. I don't know if anyone's had a chance to look at those. Does anyone have any comments?
I guess my only thing would be, you know, last month you had asked to carry this forward, and I'm wondering if anyone had any other ideas of how to carry it forward other than what I've proposed.
Yeah. Well, and it was basically a suggestion, I mean, because I feel like both Matt and I kind of feel like there was a lot of input on this, and do we want to move forward, and how do we move forward, and as a Planning Commission, how we do this, and so you've definitely laid out different areas where we could add that language. It's all pretty much the same. The sentences are all pretty much the same.
Right. So, and that's taken from other municipalities. I just researched like how they pulled that language in without overstepping their bounds of authority.
I'd like to make a few comments first, just beyond sort of legalities coming from a different perspective. You know, obviously, deed restrictions, covenants, and protecting open space is straight up in alignment with our general plan. And because of recent things that have gone on in the Planning Commission, I feel like it's really important we weigh all the evidence in our decisions. And at this juncture, or in the recent past, we haven't been allowed to weigh all that evidence because it hasn't been written into the record. Legally, we can't do that. And I think if we're thinking about the future of the town and how in controlling the growth and preserving what's here, that this is an extremely important thing to have written in, because it brings in all the evidence. I mean, what's the point of having, you know, to have not have transparency from people coming in that who are trying to develop land, or even out of ignorance, which, you know, it's a dangerous place to be. And so I'm, you know, a proponent for it. I want to figure out how to make it work. I understand that there's legal challenges in it, but I think even just listing it and not having to enforce it allows someone who's putting in an application to just simply disclose the full information, and there's no reason why we shouldn't have that there in order to make our decision.
Go ahead, if you have something to hear.
Well, I got Josie's email, so I had prepared some exhibits and some illustrations that would kind of help, but we can't plug me in, so I got to wing it. I think it back up. I missed January and February, but I was here when Caden made his statement, and I understand that you've entered Caden's statement into the record. And I was entered into the record, but I sent you all the opinion from the state property rights ombudsman,
and that was
even from the town attorney.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have those to refer to. So I'm going to kind of get pretty global here, because this really is complicated. Try to break it down. So the first thing is conservation easements and deed restrictions. Okay. Conservation easement, we know what that is. And a conservation easement fits under the general category of deed restriction. And a deed restriction can be anything that restricts the use or the sale or purchase of property in almost any way, shape, or form. So, like I pulled up a title report that I had done on a piece of property, and I counted up the deed restrictions in it, and they were like, I wish I could throw it up on the screen for you, because I copied it so I could do it. But there were like 24 deed restrictions. And there were easements, there were power line easements, there were pipe easements, there were assessments from fire protection deals. So, I mean, they're just a multitude of things that happens on a piece of property over a half of a century or more. Let me back up a minute. So anyway, deed restrictions, that term is so broad as to be, you know, almost meaningless in this context. So I would encourage you to narrow it down, number one, what you're getting at. Now, when it comes to deed restrictions and conservation easements as used in the general plan, I don't think there's anybody sitting in this room that wouldn't completely agree that those are a good thing. You know, to be able to use them correctly and to be able to put a conservation easement on a piece of property, cluster, or like Jackie Smalley did, put one on 300-acre property, restricts it to one home, a couple of other ancillary uses, but mostly an ag easement. It has to be all organic, it has to be special plantings, it has to be, you know, it's through Nature Conservancy, now held by the Department of Natural Resources, State Department of Natural Resources. And so the fact that that range is preserved is great. You know, it can never be changed. It's solid as a rock. And, you know, the Muse family on Lower Boulder put deed restrictions or what reads as a deed restriction on these pieces of property, and they should be applauded for that. And Jackie should be applauded for what she did. Anybody who preserves land and meets our general plan, I think we should be 100% for. And these are great tools that can use. Then the question becomes, how does the town figure into it? You know, what if Jackie wants to do something and say, oh, there's a deed restriction on that, how does the town figure into it? Because essentially, that deed restriction, these deed restrictions and these conservation easements are between A, the owner, and B, the buyer or holder. So in the Muse case, it's between A and B, grantor, grantee, seller, buyer. In Jackie's case, it's between owner and organization. And that organization has to be authorized by the state of Utah. It has to be incorporated as a land trust organization to be able to hold it. In this case, it was Nature Conservancy that took the easement. I mean, and the easement document is 40 pages long, and it complies with state law, and it does run in perpetuity, and it meets the state requirements for running in perpetuity. And there's an enforcement vehicle. And the enforcement vehicle is not the town. It's Nature Conservancy and assigned to the state. Okay, clustering. What would the town want to do here? The town very definitely would have an interest in becoming a third party. So you've got owner, you've got holder, and then you've got town. And the town could enter into this. But if the town does that, then it has to do it legally. It has to stay within its jurisdiction, within its state statute mandates, and with its own zoning ordinance. But the town has the ability to enter into a deed restriction, become a party, but it needs to be a signer, and it needs to be there right from the beginning. It has to be signed on the dotted line. Our town attorney has to protect the town's interest. It has to describe the town's rights and duties under the easement, so we clearly know what we're doing. And if there's a violation, we have a way to go. So, and that would apply to any kind of a private contract that the town wanted to be involved in. So, the fact that you've got this one where it's between a buyer and a seller, then that's what we're kind of dealing with here. And the whole thing came about because of some deeds down in Lower Boulder. And so, you know, like I say, I applaud you guys' efforts to do that. And, you know.
So, Curtis, so what happened basically was, while we were trying to figure out these two SDRs, because there were some deed restriction language on the original deeds that you know, came into question. So if we were to put those in our ordinance or our CUP, and it's at the bottom, and it says that, you know, that deed restriction, all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions must be disclosed, and the person signs our CUP. But the thing is it's up to A and B to figure that out. That, I mean, even if we put the deed restriction language in it, isn't it still between A and B? Like,
absolutely.
How do we?
Yeah.
That's
an
what I'm trying to figure
one,
out.
Still
yeah.
Between A and B.
So if somebody.
It's a private contract.
So if there's an issue, it's not our fault, is it?
It just needs to be cleared up.
It just
not
needs
your
to
fault,
be cleared out.
It's also not your jurisdiction.
Right.
That's a very important word in this. I mean,
yeah.
The town doesn't have the ability to interfere in private contracts or dictate them in any way, unless it's specified notice. Now, what Josie is trying to put in here, or suggesting put in here, is a disclosure item. So that's next. I'm setting the sort of the background
okay.
for all this.
So I want to ask.
There definitely are ways for the town to be involved, and in fact, I've been talking to Steve about a way to revamp the clustering ordinance, incentives, have the town pass a resolution, that it'll be a whole, well, it's more than a resolution, it has to be approved through the state, but a town can be a holder of a conservation easement. A town, a municipality is a qualified 501c3 under those regs. They can hold them. And many towns do for this exact same reason you're talking about, your general plan, and you really want to encourage this whole thing. So
you've got homeowners associations. You talked about, you know, state trusts, local trusts, but there are other enforcement that you could have in there that wouldn't just be an individual.
Well, absolutely. I mean, on the Mesa, you know, we have a homeowners association, 96 pages of covenants, and if you really go through and count the individual deed restrictions and break them down, I mean, the color of the cladding on the windows, you know, the height, the stone, the material,
right.
The percentages. I mean, there's probably 150 deed restrictions up there. I mean, whether the construction crews can play their music outside.
Right, and I mean, people need to separate out. I mean,
yeah.
You brought up this you know, this private agreement between people, but we really need to get beyond this. What the Planning Commission is wanting to do, because there's future planning,
right?
So that's why it's here. We're planning for the future. We can drop what happened and move forward on what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so with that background, that nobody's really bucking your policy or the aspirational part of this, okay? I think pretty much everybody's on board with that. Now what it comes down to is A to B. Okay, so you put that in there, and then I'm going to process the application. I'm the intake guy. Okay, go out and get me, if you don't already have it, and maybe I need a current one. And a subdivision is a little different animal, because then you're subdividing a parcel, and all this infrastructure, and so forth. But let's just take a building permit. You put it in the building permit. So I say, I'm going to have a current title report to see if you have any deed restrictions. And it comes back, and if it's like the one I had, it has, you know, 24 of them. What do I do with that? What do I do with 24 deed restrictions? Do I sort through every single one of those as the person issuing a building permit and make a decision? Do I become the judge and jury about whether any of these would affect your right to get a building permit? You know, and where it's a private contract between A and B. And so it really creates a situation where, number one, practically speaking, it's basically an impossibility. And then number two, now I'm going to use the specific example you guys introduced into the record on one of the deeds down there. And basically what it says is, I've got it on the computer there, but anyway, what it says is buyer, is, you know, this is from Bill Buse to a person named William Goldman. Okay? And this is to illustrate just why this is so impractical to do and why it probably would be struck down as being illegal to do. So it says, buyer shall, you know, I got to just read it. I don't want to misquote it. Okay, the original deed dated back in 2000 was from William Buse to a Richard Goldman. And it says, buyer agrees. He will not develop this property into a density of less than one single family home per 10 acres. Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, Bill didn't give me a call 20 years ago and say, hey, you've done a whole bunch of these things up there. Can you give me some language so it runs in purpose?
I think you're making your point, but he did consult with a lawyer. That doesn't matter. I mean, it's the magic of the language.
I agree.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, so this is what it says. So I have to break it down because this is what I would have to do when I'm doing the intake on this, and I see this on the title report. This is what I'd have to do. And so then I got to say, okay, buyer. Well, because I'm a lawyer, I know what that means. That means Goldman. It doesn't mean everybody in the world and up for all time and eternity. It means private contract. It means the buyer will do something. And then, of course, here's where Tom Hatch, you know, it says, less than, shall not be less than one home. Well, that means that anybody who doesn't have one home on those 10-acre parcels down there is in violation of the covenant. But under this language, you can put two or three or whatever the zoning ordinance allows. It does not restrict it to one home per 10-acre lot. So, you know, it's unfortunate wording, and it's unfortunate that it wasn't done in such a way, a little longer language, so that it'd be easy to enforce, and usually a self-enforcing mechanism, like you said. Well, it's inheritable. Well, it could be. If it was like if it was dedicated into a trust, you know, and you're the beneficiary of the trust, it would be. And it needs to stay that it goes and travels for all time in perpetuity with the land.
So in this case, you would check the box, and you would submit the CUP application. And you're done. And if there's a conflict with that, at least it got checked. It was brought up. Now, for future deed restrictions, somebody can write that differently. And then you would be like, oh, wait, this doesn't pass the red tape test. Okay? So it's just
but
a test.
Who's going to make that decision?
You have that authority as the zoning administrator. Right? I mean, you check, they disclosed it. He said, no.
I don't have the authority to make a judicial
And then it comes to the planning commission.
No, you don't have that authority either to be the judge and jury on a contractual matter. None of us have that authority.
Right, so then they turn it back to the two parties and they say this needs to be processed and worked out, and then we can go ahead and process the rest of your CUP. That's how other municipalities do it. That's how Garfield County has suggested. That's how Wayne County has suggested. And that's how they do business. So, I mean, we've discussed it over and over. I mean, we understand that language is questionable. No doubt, but that doesn't mean that that's going to be the same situation carrying forward. If somebody wants to do a deed restriction, they'll make sure that they cover all of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, they should. I mean, and there's definitely ways to do it. But what we're talking about now is how does the town react to this?
They they take that CUP, as Caden Figgins suggested, there's an issue. You turn it back to the parties involved, they come to an agreement, and they bring a CUP back with the state care.
Okay, great. And so that's the next step. Turn it back to the parties involved. So
yeah.
Now, because of that language in there, and because of, you know, there's a question about it, let's use this deed. So now we're talking about Julia. And so I say, well, it appears to me, let's say the language is a little stronger. Let's say the Goldman deed, which has all kinds of problems, whether it refers back to your deed, which doesn't say what it says, or whether it can place an actual restriction. But anyway, it's kind of jumbled. So now the town is saying to Julian's, and it's always better to use illustrations that are real, okay, you got to straighten this out. We're not going to give you a building permit until you go straighten it out. And so then they've got to go hire a lawyer, right? And then now what you're saying to all of the residents of this town is you have to go spend $10,000 just for starters to file a lawsuit to get this straightened out. Now, that is extremely questionable whether we have a jurisdiction. And they don't have
that. I think that's a stretch. You could get
a jurisdiction to do that.
You could get an opinion letter and then present that back, and you'd be like, okay, it's done, and then it's still back to the parties if the parties want to do a litigation.
I
think it's a stretch. You're not telling people to go spend $10,000.
Well, again, I need more specifics. What are you saying Northfield County does? What are you saying that...
Caden Figgins, when he was here and presented, said that if you had a deed restriction and issue, he was here for the whole discussion, and he stood up at the end and said that is more than enough reason to hold on this until that issue's been worked out.
And to put the burden over onto the property owner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I say something? So Josie has just given us some examples of what she would like to see. So, but, you know, that's just one person, basically. So this is just, so you said that you and Steve are basically talking about this, too, a little bit. Is that what you said?
In the sense that the town...
Right.
Would entertain the idea of being a party to a conservation easement up front. Absolutely would.
We were talking about cluster.
Yeah, so I think that the thing that we wanted to do was not to drop the ball on this. So Josie has some examples of what she would like to see. I personally would like to see what you would suggest us doing if that's something that we want to do and if we're able to bring deed restrictions into language. I think that's really what we were looking for. These, you know, Josie has these examples, and I'm sure you have something too, you know, so. Haley?
Well, just quick, I mean, if the deed restriction is like you're saying, if it's just a check mark, so just for my clarification, who checks after, you know, so-and-so says, yes, deeds were checked, we're good to go, maybe they didn't check them, maybe they did and they're good, maybe they checked them and they, you know, and it doesn't line up. So who checks that? Is it you, the zoning? Is it, who looks into that, you know, to get the application process? You look at the...
I process all the applications, and so I'm the one that does the intake, and so I'm the first person to see all of this. Now, it's a building permit. You know, you guys have no involvement in the building permit, okay? I do the building permits as the zoning administrator. Those clearly spelled out under permitted uses, chapter 7, I believe. Then chapter 8 is conditional uses. That rolls over to you. On that, what I do is I prepare the application, certify it as complete, then you make that decision. Then on amending ordinances or subdivision ordinances, I do the intake. You guys do, look at the preliminary plat, you pass that up to the town council, they do a preliminary plat review again, another public hearing, and then they do a final plat. So there's a division of duties in here, and it's all clearly spelled out in our zoning ordinance.
But the burden of proof goes back to an applicant, and when an applicant signs that, and if it turns out that that wasn't the case, then that's fraudulent.
And that's checked.
I do.
Yeah.
The burden of proof is on the applicant.
So the other.
And then that goes back to the applicant.
So.
Okay, let me talk about liability here. That's what this is, town council, so I'm going to come back to that, right? Okay, so, and it should be foremost in your mind too. You're using Caden as an, as what he said here as an employee. I communicated with Caden after that about that interview. And here's where Caden is right and here's where Caden is not. Here's an ordinance and here's a deed restriction. This is a private contract. This is authorized statutorily by the state, as you heard today in the webinar. Mm-hmm. And it all rolls down here to your ordinances, and the rules are strict, what we can and can't do. This is a private contract. This deed restriction is a private contract between parties A and B. And it can have holders, it can have trusts, it can have whatever, or it can be as simple as a line on a deed, which, you know, is weak, but there. So, the ordinance says 10 acres. And the ordinance says, the county says 6 acres. The deed restriction says 10 acres. Somebody comes in and they want to, well, it's not good, the movies are, it's 5 acres. So, Caden's, his email said, the deed restriction overrides the ordinance. And that's absolutely correct. You know, the ordinance gives you permission for 5, which a lot of these products says no, you're going to 10. And he's absolutely correct there. But then, you know, what if you had a deed restriction that said you have to do 2.5? You have to subdivide that 2.5 acres in that deed restriction, and the ordinance says 5. Does that deed restriction still override the ordinance?
It can't be less restrictive.
That's right, that's right. And the fact is, they're apples and bananas. They're two totally different things. And the property right ombudsman, in his opinion, said, you don't have jurisdiction to meddle unless you're somehow given that. Now, if Caden stayed with that position, you know, somebody comes in, they got 1,000 acres out there somewhere in the county. And they've got, and you know, a year ago, they had a chance to sell it for a lot of money. They come in for an application and whatever, and somebody says, oh, there's a deed restriction. You've got to go sue that other guy, and you've got to straighten this out. And then coronavirus hits, and the value of that plummets down to a quarter of the value. We have to be absolutely sure we're on solid ground denying that application that is allowed in the ordinance because of a private deed restriction on it. And this is where the rubber really hits the road. And this is what the town attorney is saying, and this is what the property rights owner is saying, and this is what Caden is overlooking. And I asked him, I said, Caden, okay, here's an example. Up on the mesa, we have this whole bunch of deed restrictions. And I said, we're in the county. Somebody comes over and applies for a building permit. Does it become, under your theory, is it now Jared's job, the building inspector, is it his job to look at all of our color palettes, look at our heights, and do all of these things to make sure we're not violating those deed restrictions? Sorry, I need some water. Or is it the job, I guess it, anyway, or is it the job of the parties to work it out? And if somebody's wrong, whatever, then they litigate it. But if Caden stuck with that, and they denied an application solely on the basis of a deed restriction, then that could be real big trouble. And every attorney's going to tell you that. So that then says, then why would you ever put it in these applications? And we'll be doing it for ownership purposes to make sure that a subdivider owns the property or a builder owns the property. If you're going to build something on a piece of property, then I just want to know you own it. But beyond that, you know, I can't look at the new deed restrictions on there and then try and interpret that language and say, Oh, well, I don't think it really says what it means or Goldman's really ties it in, because once again, I'm the judge and jury. And the liability on that's way too strict.
Curtis? So when we were doing the RSTRs, someone suggested basically that we should go ahead and pass, give them a conditional use permit with the restriction of making sure that that deed was clear. Do you remember something that was told to me basically that I should have just gone ahead and granted the CUP to one of those two.
We verify ownership.
So if I would have done that, if I would have done that, what would you have done? What would it have changed? I mean, we didn't attach that. Both of those RSTRs went through free and clear. But if we had done a CUP with the condition that the it had to have a clean deed restriction, who would have been responsible for that? The owner?
Well, or you? Say, under the scenario you just gave me, you put that language in, and now I look at it and I said, oops, there's a question here. We're going to deny all your permits until you go clear it up. And then they're going to have to spend all this money to go clear it up. I guarantee you, you're going to get sued.
So is it between like Goldman, let's just take that case.
Yeah.
Is it up to Goldman to come to the Julians and say,
exactly,
you're not following what is on the deed restriction? So I think the concern, or my concern, and maybe I'm speaking for everyone or maybe not, but is that, you know, would Goldman, or just in any scenario, someone come, you know, what if, you know, the town's going to grow, people are going to come and people are going to buy lots and deed restrictions might get lost, or, you know, covenants or whatever might get lost, and if Goldman doesn't come and say you're actually not abiding by the deed restriction, then they have really free range to do whatever. Granted, I mean, they could get totally, you know, sued in the end, and who knows, but I don't know if there's no way to.
No, there absolutely is. There absolutely is.
And definitely questionable.
You know, so it's a very straightforward matter to make the deed restrictions enforceable and to have the mechanism to do it. You can do it through a conservation easement holder. You can do it through a homeowners association. You can do it through a trust. You can do it through any of the instruments associated. And that's the way you're supposed to do it. I mean, we don't ask Jared to enforce all of our deed restrictions up there about colors and heights and reflectivity and night sky, dark skies, and et cetera, et cetera. We have an association that is burdened with that and will be forever. They have to do it. They collect dues to do it. I'm processing a subdivision. You're going to see a deed restriction come across your desk here pretty soon. I'm processing a deal for Kennedy if he goes through, or if he continues with it, for a two-lot subdivision. And for the first time, because it's in the ordinance, where it actually says we have to do something that it can be considered a deed restriction, I'm making him form a road association. And that's a deed restriction. It restricts the use of the road and says how it has to be maintained for emergency vehicles and so forth. And it's going to be recorded against every lot in the subdivision. And it'll be there, and they'll give them the right to collect dues. It'll have, you know, a minimum. The question I have to talk to Steve about and the town attorney is, we're setting it all up. What part will the town play in this? And there's a thing called a third-party beneficiary. Do I make them a third-party beneficiary so if they fail and the whole road is, you know, impassable for emergency vehicles, does the town then have a right to come in and say, either you do it or we're going to, you know, take you to court, or the town attorney will be talking to you and make him do it? Or do we trust? I don't know the answer to that yet, but that's an example where the town might get into it. But for sure, the town will be requiring it, you know, because it's in the ordinance, and it always has been. It's just never been done.
Okay, I have two questions for our discussion. Let's see. One's for Mark. Did you talk to, in Wayne County, did you talk to them about this issue? I remember you saying something about that.
Yeah, I'm going to say something.
Well, I'm asking, what I'm wondering if you can give us a brief on what you learned in Wayne County.
Well, I just talked to, I told them what went on over here, and they talked about they had a similar case over there, which I told you about, after what they had, there were some big restrictions from a trust, and when they reviewed, they wanted something like it involved in the consortium, and it was required that the parties clear that up before they would sound on the subdivision.
So do they actually have language in their subdivision on that?
Okay. But, you know, and I told them what happened over here, and I said, so, you know, what Lori told you, that means it won't mark the kids. And they said, well, that doesn't sound like what he told us. You know, so there seems to be some confusion here. And, you know, what Kurt says about the town getting in the trust business, that's all fine and good. And the problem with the language in the news, that's an issue. The Julian problem could have been solved a long time ago if, you know, that stuff would have got out there. The Julian case is a perfect example of why you should go ahead with this language in there and have these checkoffs. Because it's not about, you know, these worst-case scenarios that Kurt's talking about. It's whether this is reasonable or appropriate for you to make a decision. And you get the information out there, right, and make it transparent, then you can judge it on a case-by-case basis and decide what you want to do. Just because you have a checkoff doesn't mean that it's going to throw every single case that comes to you in court if it's not quite right.
Okay. Okay, that brings me to my next question. Thanks. Curtis, so even if the town doesn't have jurisdiction and can't enforce it, why couldn't we just ask for disclosure as sort of a self-policing mechanism? And that's not as good as being able to really bring the deed restriction, but why can't we just have it as a box that they check off? You see what I'm getting at?
And then we have no authority to do anything with it other than just...
Right, but again, a self-policing mechanism. So most people who sign up, they realize if it's out of ignorance or whatnot, there's still some level of transparency.
Can you think of any other instances in town where something like this would be out of ignorance? I mean, we know what's on the Muse property down here, and it has not been enforced for 20 years, and now it's come up, really trying to have the town enforce it. And I understand why the Muse family wouldn't want to be proactive and hire the attorney and do it. That'd be very expensive.
Curtis, let me say that we're not asking the town to enforce it. That's just an incorrect statement. It should have been disclosed, and so that it wasn't a surprise to the applicant. That's all. I mean, you're blowing this so far beyond what's being proposed here. A checklist and a disclosure.
You just told me that I had to deny the permit.
That was a suggestion that from the CUP, from the conversation we had on what you do when you're looking at CUP applications, and if there's issues that come forward, they get pushed back the applicant to clear those up. Now, you know, that's not what I'm saying here. I'm saying everything, you know, and this is like points at suggestions from research that I pulled from other municipalities. You know, to go that far down the
blowing
it out of proportion.
Basically, so we, as the Planning Commission, we're just trying to help move things towards the town council. And so that's what we're doing right now. And I know that you and Steve are working on it, and so I think that's kind of where we were going, was because there was so much confusion. I feel like there's still so much confusion.
Okay, well,
and so for me personally, what I'd like to do is that, so this is something that's concerning, and so we'll just move it forward to the town council and
the zoning
administrator. Is that, how does that sound? I mean, Josie, you made your points, and
we've got to clarify this for the record.
Right.
Okay, you put this in there, and it's a checklist. It's a box on a checklist. And then it comes to me, and I see the deed restriction on there, and then I see the one, and then I see the other one. But I don't have to do anything. I don't have to deny the permit. I don't have to go to the Julian and say, you've got to clear this up. All I have to do is say, something exists there, and that's the end of the story. I go ahead and sign off the permit and issue it, and we're good.
Well, it's not about language. The language that's in there is just a checklist.
Right, okay.
Now, you know, you really counted on deed restrictions. Should that language say conservation easements, covenants, and agreements, and drop deed restriction? I mean, is there a better way to state that that doesn't cause so much concern? And then just one more point. Muse developments is the only example that this is ever going to come up. But I've had several conversations in the community where people would like to possibly do that with their land. You know, we have a lot of virgin land in this community,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
So it's not just us. It can't be framed that way. This is planning. This is future planning for the entire community.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to subdivide or somebody wants to do anything and do that, you know, when they subdivide, they tell me that's what they want to do, I'll help them do it. I've got the language. I've got 25 years of experience on doing deed restrictions or covenants, you know, whatever. And we have, out of 1,000 acres up there, 950 of it is in conservation easement because we do PUDs. We just have a building pad and everything else is, the whole place is in a conservation easement. Then we have all of the deed restrictions or covenants. And restrictions is an okay word, but it's really broad. It's covenants, conditions, and restrictions, i.e. CC&Rs, and that's just a typical word. You can call them whatever you want for what rules. It's kind of a language. But if somebody wants to do that, and I'm around, even if when I'm gone from this job, all they have to do is pick up the phone, and I'll give them a template, and I'll help them, because I firmly believe that restricting the density further, or putting a conservation easement on there, or clustering, I'll help them for free. And I'll make sure that it's enforceable, and that there's an organization to enforce it, and the town will never have to be involved in it.
So that language that's in, you know, that we're proposing in this checklist should match how, you know, that would be done. If it's not the way that I pulled this from, I believe it was out of Texas, all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions. If that's not the right way to state it, then let's state it so it lines up to any future, you know, conservation easements that they line up.
No, it's...
So people know.
I'm not quarreling with your language, and I haven't brought up your language. It's just, then what? Then what?
And well, that's so feeling. Far it doesn't say anything. It's just disclosure.
Okay,
so,
then I agree with that, Colleen. Take a vote and shoot that up to the town council.
Yeah.
And let, you know...
And I just want to say...
If it's just a disclosure, and I look at it, oh, that's interesting.
In our zoning ordinance, you have the authority as a zoning administrator for interpretation. That's your authority. So we're not telling you what that would be. You would tell us, you know, with that checklist, that's your interpretation.
Well,
right?
My interpretation is to fairly and equitably interpret the ordinances.
Exactly.
And so... Then if you put that language in there, I'll have to fairly interpret it as being meaningless. I mean, what do I do with it?
It's a checklist so that people don't come in without having checked the history, as Matt really stated well.
Okay.
Not coming in with the ignorance of maybe not having that information.
Okay.
And it's so that information doesn't get lost historically.
Okay.
Right?
You're right. Your draft doesn't go as far as the prior record and the minutes that I read when I was gone, where they say, well, it should be denied, and then the parties go work it out. You know, and that's where I have the problem, is we're taking our duty under this very carefully prescribed under the ordinance and saying, oh, well, here's something outside the ordinance. You guys got to go spend the money to work it out. But if that's not the case, then, you know.
And for me personally, I don't want to vote on anything tonight. What you gave to us, I would like to look at it a little bit more because we didn't get the information until
I
a few hours. So yeah, and I didn't see it until today. So for me, I don't personally want to vote on this tonight because I feel like there's a lot more that needs to be.
So, and I just have a question. I mean, if I hadn't done this research,
yeah,
it was on the agenda. What was going to be discussed had I not pulled that together?
Well, I think the thing is that it did open a discussion, and we do want to talk about it. And so Curtis is back, and Steve is here. You know, so I'm just saying that
I don't necessarily want to vote on exactly what you have right now. I'd like to look at it, and Curtis has been gone for 2 months, and so I'd like to see this all come together and have it worked out, but I'm not prepared to vote tonight on anything. Does anybody else have a say on this? Is anybody else ready to vote?
I mean, I'm clear to vote, so.
Somebody make a motion.
Okay, so should I, so does anyone else want to vote on this tonight? Is that a motion? I mean, I'm asking you guys a question basically before we go any farther.
I have one more question. Okay. So with this checklist, the owner checks that they have disclosed the deed restrictions. Then when it comes to you to look over, is it required by checking that box that the deed restriction is then, like, he has that language to then read and look at? Or is this just, like, based on the owner's word saying, yep, we've looked at it, we're okay to do this?
So
there's
a couple different sections that, you know, where a title report was required, and then that would be in writing. The other applications just say to disclose. I would visualize that would still be a title report, because when anybody buys land, they should have that, right? And so, I mean, the question comes when an applicant signs that, and that, you know, they say that they've provided all the information required and they're signing to the, you know, that's their, like I said, burden of proof, and if they didn't actually do that, that would be fraud. So it would come that, yeah, I would imagine that this title would be part, it will definitely be part of the title reports, but I would think the applications, it should be too, but that's not up to me.
Right, so then you get it, and you read over it, like we've said, and you decide that either, like, I mean, yeah, it's confusing, there's gray area, you know, and the language you mentioned, about having your job is...
Zoning administrator.
Well, yeah, the zoning administrator, but to look over the language, like, you have the right to say yes or no, and that's your judgment, and you're not going to get in trouble for whether it says...
It's interpretation.
Or it's your interpretation, thank you, yeah. So, I guess my question is, like, you can say, you know, okay, this is way far off, they're wanting to do something that absolutely isn't stated as... you know, a possibility here with the deed restriction, or there's gray area, and, you know, or yeah, it is in compliance. So that seems like there's like either like a hard yes, a hard no, or gray area, and can you, with the gray area, make a decision of a yes or a no?
So,
does that,
you want to,
I don't know, right?
And I guess it comes back to, you know, it's disclosure so that the applicant is aware of any restrictions on their land. You know, I mean, that's really, I think, the intent.
Yeah, and that's what I'm suggesting. I understand the jurisdiction and that the town doesn't want to get involved between A and B, but as a disclosure statement and a self-policing policy, transparent on the public record, why not?
Yeah.
How can that hurt? I mean, I think that's what, at least some of us on the Planning Commission, it's just, it's not ideal, but it also doesn't leave something invisible in the background.
If that's the sum total of it, then
I don't really want to vote on something that there's so much confusion about still. I mean, I appreciate the work that you did, and I think that it should go forward. I'm not prepared to vote on it tonight. Does anybody else want to, I mean, do we want to have a vote on who wants to vote on it tonight?
Actually, Colleen, I think as chair,
yeah,
that's your call.
Yeah.
And you can make that call.
Actually, under the rules.
So, yeah.
No, if she doesn't want to vote on it, well, send me a motion, yeah.
But any member of the Planning Commission can make a motion, and if there's a second, then it's called to a vote. Whether to allow somebody to make a motion or not, or bring something to a vote, is not just the call of the chairman. Any one of you are entitled anyone with a five are entitled to make a motion, and then a second. Now, Colleen can say, I'm not prepared to vote, but that's basically her personal decision.
Well, when we talked about this last month, when it was brought up, I didn't bring it up as something that I felt like we would be voting on something this next month. I felt like we were going to start looking at ways that we could bring deed restrictions into our ordinances and our zoning and whatever, because it was such a hot topic and it seemed like people wanted to have more information and want to have something viable. So I would like to not vote. I would like, because Curtis hasn't been here the next 2 months, to put it back on the agenda for next month. And because I still don't understand why we have Caden and Mark McGiff and people that are, we don't have a standard answer for this. And I feel we need to have that.
We suss it out and everyone in the Planning Commission does their homework.
Yeah.
And we come back and make a decision about it next month.
Okay.
So I make a motion that this is tabled until next month.
I have a couple more questions before you move on, please.
Okay.
I need more specifics than just Wayne County, da-da-da, or Garfield County, da-da-da. So what in Wayne County, what's in their ordinance? Has anybody seen reference you can give me to, or a person you've talked to who knows over there, so I can chase that down? I don't like things on the record that are, you know, well, somebody said this or thought this. So part of my job is to go get the facts and deal with facts. And then the same with Garfield County. I mean, I pretty much know what Caden said. And I also know where he's, quote, quite frankly, misunderstanding.
There's a couple of emails from Caden that are in the record.
Yeah.
You put his email in the record, right?
Yep.
Right. So I have a copy of that, and that's Caden's opinion. But I'm going to talk to him, see if it's backed up by any ordinance or anything over there, and so forth. And the same with Wayne County. And then I have one other question, too. When you put this in there, what is the applicant's duty in terms of, I mean, it's a checklist. Are you aware of any da-da-da-da, or can you read it again?
In the ordinances under the title report, it says that all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions must be disclosed. I mean, that's a title report, so that's just, I don't think that that could
be questioned. Does it say title report?
Yeah, this is under the section that is already required, that when they put in these applications for preliminary and final, that they have to provide.
That's on subdivisions, right?
It's in the subdivision report.
Okay.
And then in the,
did you get Chelsea's email?
Yeah, she was on it.
Yeah.
And then in the zoning ordinance, it's under conditional use permits, that checklist for conditional use permits is in the zoning ordinance and then also on the CUP application. And so it would be adding it as a checklist item to the CUP. Okay. And
it doesn't require a title report, right?
No, it just says, let me scroll back up there real quick.
It's proof of ownership.
Disclose all agreements.
Disclose all agreements, covenants, and deed restrictions.
Okay, this is your proposed amending language.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right, so, and that's all that it says. And then on the building permit,
okay,
the language is just a little different. This came off an example that I found, and it just says indicate the deed restrictions, if any, otherwise applicable to the real property on which the dwelling is to be located.
Okay.
Or the applicant has checked for any property-specific information, such as deed restrictions or restricted covenants on the property. And I don't, you know, that language is, I don't really see an issue with that language. It's indicating and disclosing.
If that's where it's just, you know, I'll have to think about that. Because all the minutes I read, all your discussions when I was present in November, December, it went further than that. But if all it is just, you know, are you aware of any, well, the subdivision ordinance, I get a title report.
Well, there's a reason that, you know, when I did the research and pulled this from other municipalities, we didn't go further than that, because this has to be within our authority.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not suggested here to go further than that.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Somebody else have any other comments?
So I make a motion to table this discussion until next month.
Okay. Can I
share any of the other authority that you looked at?
Yes.
Please.
All in favor?
Who seconded?
We moved to...
Cookie seconded.
I seconded. Thank you, Jason. And all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, so the next bullet that we have is to talk about the map. When we did the RSTR, we separated the town into three different sections, just for reference. But we didn't really create a map to go with what we had suggested. And so I called Caden, and he is starting to create a map that we can work with. And I think you guys all got the map, and Curtis did. And does anyone have any suggestions or comments that they want to make? It wasn't a great map as far as I was concerned. And I think it's just a start. And so what I did too was I told him that Curtis would be back in town, and Steve, they needed to look at the map too, and so that we can all talk about it. And so that's why we're talking about this tonight. Does anyone have any comments, Curtis?
I sent out an email, and I think y'all got it. And then basically, I talked to Steve. On maps, I have access to much better maps. And I can get full size like that, and they show ownership and everything. So I talked to Steve, and he said he'd be willing to allocate money if we find someone to go around and actually count. And we were talking about maybe Tessa doing it, because she's so thorough. She just really does a good job on stuff. And so she'll go through, and we give her a criteria of, I'll read the ordinance, and we'll say, okay, here's what we're looking for. And you go through and you mark everyone on the map. And then once we have the data, you know, which is an important word when we're doing ordinances, once we have the data, then you can make logical choices about how to do an even distribution. And that's what you need in order to not be, as I said in the Senate webinar today, not arbitrary and capricious in your findings. So I think that's the place to start, is if we can hire someone. The map is easy for me to have. They're really good big maps. And I also have a map in progress for five counties, a new zoning map that's digital. And so she might be able to do that. But if worst case, it's very current, and we can get a big copy printed off. So it's going to take a big copy to mark all the houses.
So two thoughts, questions. Is it simple to ascertain private ownership and primary ownership? Because that's part of that, the language in that. So that would be...
It is, because the new zoning map has, he's identified parcel numbers and everything, and you can actually click on it digitally, and you can see the parcel number, and then some people she'll know, hey, they live here, they're full-time, and then but where there's a question, then she can say, you look at the tax assessment. And if the actual value is $100,000, just arbitrarily, but if the assessed value is $50,000 or $60,000, then you know that that's not their that their primary residence, because they're getting the 45% discount and on the taxes. But if they're assessed full value, if actual value and assessed value is identical, then it's not, it's a secondary residence.
Okay. And then the other thing, I think that was on the letter, had to do with a proposal from the lawyer around if we defined, rather than doing the mapping, we defined the number of places by the zoning, high density, mid density, low density.
So can I expand on that?
Yeah.
I had that same thought that maybe we could consider, and the mapping exercise is going to be a lot of work, and it's going to be something that's going to change over time as the town grows. So I propose we step back and we look at our zoning districts again. And we originally came up with the number of 12 RSTRs, right?
Yeah.
we have four zones that that's permitted in. We have our GMU, Greenbelt Multiple Use, Low Density, Medium Density, and High Density. And if you look at the map and you see how those sit proportionally in town, you have small, high density, you have the next size up is medium density, the next size up is your low density, and of course we've got the GMU, which is the majority of the acreage within the town. But that's also where there are a lot fewer landowners, because that's where, you know, like the agricultural areas. I propose that we do it by zoning districts, where there's three allowed in each district, and I think that that's proportional as far as how many people, given the size of the district, or at least close enough. And you might say that, well, that's not really fair in the GMU, but you know, I argue that in that district, we're allowing guest ranches, right? Which is a use that's not allowed in any other districts besides the commercial zone. And so that's a use that's going to bring in a lot of traffic and, you know, increase that type of commercial activity. I also would argue that, you know, our STRs aren't the best fit for the GMU, because that is established to provide areas for agricultural activities and to allow other uses determined to be compatible with agricultural uses and activities. And I think that, you know, commercial tourism is the exact opposite of that. But to be fair across all four zones, still allowing the three permits in the GMU. And I just would like to put that up for discussion.
Well, I think it's, there again, that's why we're doing this map, basically. I mean, if we need to make the changes, I think we need to open it up for a little more discussion. Like, if we're going to go with that zoning, then we need to be able to look at that, and if we're going to change the boundaries on that.
Yeah, we still have to go through this amendment, mm-hmm. but we wouldn't have to come up with these three zones and mapping and following through with that. Those zones are already done, and I think that as far as not being arbitrary and capricious on this, the zones are proportional, and except for the GMU, but I think given that that's the agricultural zone that we have, then we have our reasoning.
Anybody else have any comments?
I would have one little thing, and I haven't had time to think through what you're saying, so I don't know, but Wildland Fire wants to map the whole town and all the addresses and all of the residents and so forth. And so we'd be killing two birds with one stone, and if Steve's willing to allocate the money and somebody wants the job, then that's another reason why it's probably a good thing to do, whatever you do with the information. But it's a good data set, and it's a good baseline for future growth and whatever. So for those reasons, I would encourage you to go ahead and take Steve up on his offer to fund that and get the map going, and then how do you use it? I'm not sure about the zone thing.
Then I suggest that, you know, let's look at that mapping exercise. Let's keep this other thought in mind that we could do it by zoning districts as an alternative. And then once we get the information, we can have that conversation.
Yeah. Because the reason why it was brought up is because we have the RSTR, and we have to have a map that goes with that RSTR so people know. So that, I mean, it's something that we need to do, you know. So
I want to amend that. The reason it was brought up was because right now there's no cap on RSTR growth, and that's the most important part. So getting it done in a timely fashion is also important.
Yeah.
Because as far as I'm concerned, our decision was made in May of 2019, and the map should reflect ownership at that point, I think.
Right, and you made that. That's a good point. So, but we have to have a map. We need to have a map that goes with the STR, and we can either make it for that, or we can put these other layers on it.
Yeah, those layers are done.
More,
and if you went three per zone, that's the 12 that we discussed.
Yeah.
Does the offer still stand?
The offer stands. If you go back to another map or anything else, you have to amend the current ordinance. So it has to start back.
Which has to be amended anyway, because right now we have percentage.
And we might get it all.
That's what I'm saying. I would get the data before we make any decisions.
Yeah.
Just from the town council standpoint, I wouldn't vote to change anything unless I had substantial evidence that what's been planned is not working or what is being proposed will work better. So don't even, I would say don't bring it until you're ready and it would start with the map. And yes, the office is open to do the mapping first.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any comments or questions? So, do you? So, will we table this until next month again?
Suggest we try and bring Tess on board, and I can arrange that, or Curtis, either way, or both of us.
Yeah.
We might as well
start writer and say because I'll sit with the maps if they're. I have some good maps that the Hoyts produced a few years ago, and then I've got the zoning map, so we've got to wait for her to get started right away on a big enough template that she can put things in.
Okay, and I know she's out of town here for a week or two right now. So.
Right.
So do we want, we'll just put it on the agenda for next month, and then we can get the information from Curtis.
Just do an update,
An update.
And so both, yeah, the mapping exercise, but also to think about this zoning thing. And get some clarification on that. It's an intriguing.
Both of those will go back to the original concern that Matt brought up, that there wasn't a cap on the percentage. Any other comments? Okay, so the next thing we have is to schedule a work meeting to customize the Nellis decision-making process. So does anyone have any?
I'd like to speak to that.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
I think we all get our copies of his worksheet and stuff. I don't know whether you got the instructions on how to use it.
I sent all the stuff that I have.
Did you? Okay. So I think today it was mentioned again the importance of having paper. Trail or backup of how we came to this, to our conclusions about projects. So I don't know how Matt, all your work is coming along. Do you meet once a month or
once a month?
I don't know how people feel about getting started on this, but we do have things on the horizon that are coming up. And we also mentioned that we wanted to maybe use a past project that we did pass through planning and use that as an example using this worksheet. But I don't know about the timing of whether it's just way too much to plan something else or wait till your project is finished?
Either way, I mean, personally, it's up to everyone else too, but
yeah.
I'm available, just don't want to do it on the Thursday of the Planning Commission.
Yeah, why not? well, does anyone have a suggested date that we could...
And do you guys understand what we're doing, basically? Okay, so would you, let's pick a date, then, where we can have a workshop.
I'm not really available till after the end of the month, just putting that up.
Okay.
Seeing as how it's been well over a year since anyone has sat down and really worked with the worksheets, I think you're, schedule an initial meeting soon, or whenever, I'm not going to put the date out there, but schedule an initial meeting just to go over kind of what this is we're looking at and review some of the basic concepts. And that would probably just take an hour.
Some months.
And then from there, deciding how you want to attack the little animals, coming up with a new criteria, or changing that criteria.
So we meet on the town council meets on the first Thursday, we meet on the second Thursday, so does everybody talk about a Thursday, like either the third or the fourth?
I
like, you will, okay. Of April, the first Thursday.
Oh, let's see, I gotta look.
Or wait, Tom Johnson.
Yeah, I don't have.
When will you be back, Haley?
Well,
the end of the month?
Yeah, I mean, like, I could do it this week before this coming Thursday. Or I won't be back till the second. You know, I could do it on the second or the first or second or any time after that.
Oops. Yep, you're fine here. Okay. So here we are, Terry. So how about, so you can't do it after the second. Okay.
That's a Friday.
Yeah. How about the first week in April? That'd be the 6th through the 10th.
Tuesday, April 7th.
Tuesday, April 7th. Great. Okay.
Evening? Is that okay for everybody? That seems to be.
Is evening better for you?
Better, yeah.
Okay.
What time are you picking up? Like a later afternoon or 7 or?
7's good with me.
Yes. 7's great number day again.
It's the 7th. The 7th at 7 o'clock.
Oh, is it 7 on the 2nd?
7th.
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 7th. Yay. All right. Okay, and that's for?
It's April?
Yes, April. Yeah. You were there, weren't you, at that, when we did that with Ellis? Okay, that would be great. Okay. Thank you. So does everybody have any comments? Okay, so so then we have upcoming business for, so we have things that we, will you read back what we've already put on the agenda, Peg? Or
it kind of muddles, but
okay.
I believe we are talking 2 public hearings.
Right.
Correct, for both of the CUPs.
Unless otherwise notified?
Yeah, unless, as long as they proceed as they indicate they will.
Okay.
It's a change.
And again, you can do the public hearings and take much more time if you need to discuss.
Okay.
Having a public hearing doesn't mean you have to vote on the deadline necessarily.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
And is that 6:45 then? Or
usually you do it within you'd start at 7 and one of those would be the first item on the agenda, but you can schedule it on time you want. The town council does their independent meeting, but
that's what I was going to say. So let's do it at 6:30.
6:30.
Okay.
Okay. So we would have both of the public here at 6:30, right?
Okay.
And then we also talked about, so we'll go ahead and bring back up, we'll have an update from the table of use group. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, and then we could also, we're going to table the deed restrictions, so we'll talk about the deed restrictions again, Curtis. You'll give us some information on that, what you come up with. And then we can also, we'll also talk a little bit more about the map.
Okay.
We want to put that up. We want to put that on the agenda too. So we'll be talking about the zoning map if anybody's come up with information.
Was there anything specific? Do you want to describe the deed restriction discussion any more specifically, or just continuation of?
Well, I think it's just a continuation. You know, Josie brought up what she would like to see on for the deed restrictions. I think because Curtis hasn't been here, I think we need to. I just, like I said, I find it very confusing that we have Mark McGiff saying something and Hayden and how we're going to put this all together. So I don't want to let it go. I want to keep bringing it up, I guess. Does anybody else have any comments?
How about titling clarifying deed restrictions?
Okay, that would be fine.
You have a proposal on the table from Josie, so and you tabled it tonight, so you just continue talking about it.
Yeah.
See if you can get it. Comfort level of a solution.
Okay. So that's how we would word that.
Okay. And let's see, that next meeting is the 9th, so you may then also have some follow on after your Nellis board meeting.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That'll
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. I mean, yeah. But, and then you got the map that we want to follow through with what's come up with the map.
Right. So follow the map and continue discussion on Josie's zoning concepts idea. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a big agenda too.
Okay. So then the next thing that we have is we always close with public comments. If anyone has any public comments, here's the microphone. Thank you, Donna.
Okay, I'm not allowed to ask questions. I would if I could. I have two very specific questions. I'll try to turn them into a comment form. The first was about the information that on RCUP not being distributed to anyone ahead of time and just being brought up at the meeting. I don't believe anyone else on the board received that information.
I think everybody, did everybody get that?
Yeah.
Everybody got it.
Oh, you did, because no one talked about it. I did not get that impression. So you all were aware of that, that she, this, there may be a, I can't ask anybody. That's good to know.
Yeah.
you don't have to answer.
So, yeah, I think that's why we went ahead with the public hearing, is because everybody did get a chance to look at
what Josie brought up?
No.
No, I don't think she presented it to Curtis or any of you.
Well, no, because this, it has to be done in public, okay? It has to be in a public meeting. This was part of the webinar today. When it involves an individual or a couple individuals, we can't have that discussion outside of a public meeting. So that's why this was the first discussion. You put in your application. This was our first discussion, and we discussed our concerns.
I just brought it up because it seems like usually when there's new information, it's passed around. So I'm.
We can't do that on a CUP. If it was legislative, we can do that back and forth in emails.
Okay.
Right? Isn't that what they said today? This is quasi-legislative, and I can't send emails regarding somebody's CUP back and forth to everybody. We couldn't do it on the Julian application.
I don't like to do things by email
either. Yeah, that's a good point. I'll have to drill down on that a little bit, because
you did send out on Julian.
There's no restrictions on email conversations, but you can't make decisions.
Right.
We were having a conversation on the RSTR, and you said you were getting nervous about that happening on emails and not in a public meeting.
Well,
I get nervous about it.
There's a new statute that thankfully got through, because she's the only meeting person.
And electronic meetings, I mean, they do happen, and there's a lot of information that gets passed on email, and you can't make decisions on email, but you can have discussions, share new information, share applications, share supporting documentation, talk, no decisions, and of course any of those things would also be subject to being, what would be the word, subpoenaed or whatever. I mean, it's not public record that's going to be posted someplace, but it is available for the public.
It's a strange, very short statute, but it basically, it's fairly new, but I mean, you can't Skype and do it with three people.
Right.
You can't phone conference and do it with three people.
Right.
But this statute, I guess, for a practical reason at the state level, they said you can't email.
Well, so
they
kind of, that's good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't match up to what he did today in his presentation, two slides. And one was the legislative, which is if we were doing an ordinance, no problem. If it involved a CUP, we can't do it. So either he needs to update his slides or we need to clarify it.
You're talking about the webinar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's the general rule nationwide, but for some reason Utah has added, there's a last section of the open meeting law that I didn't know about. They pointed it out to me that they, for some reason, exempted email. So.
Okay, Donna, go ahead.
I'll finish. The next comment was, because it came out so fast and it hadn't gotten occurred to us to have time to look at it, I believe you said there were, and I don't need comments, 37 acres in one plot, which allows five houses if you do five per. So I don't understand, but I know we're going to research all this. We just felt like it would have been great not to be blindsided.
The store by it.
Thank you.
Could I answer one of those things too? And
yeah.
Typically, when we're back in the paper world, it was the 10 day, you had to have your application in advance 10 days before they met. I'm just saying?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, that process-wise, we just had a procedure to do that. I don't think it was in our ordinance. I think it was just a common procedure that we had a 10-day deadline to get applications, and that gave people time to do the intake, make the copies, get them all spread out to you guys. And so people came in kind of more knowledgeable during that 10-day period. Now, our ordinance actually does say, you submit an application, it goes to Curtis, and it could have immediately gone to a public hearing. I mean, our process by ordinance says that. Giving these, like, tonight was introduction. They were under no obligation to have read all that information or digested anything, you know, from anybody yet. And so it was a great introduction. Now they have a month to think about stuff. The public hearing will happen. There will be plenty of time to work through any kind of stuff.
Yes. It was the additional information tonight that I didn't.
When's it supposed to come up then?
We'll talk about it. Thank you.
I don't understand. If we don't discuss it here, in a public setting, when does it come out?
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. Thank you. So does any, go ahead.
Just real quick, I was wondering if Tom Hoyt, Matt, if the language you guys have been working on, table of uses, could be shared before that meeting. It would be really helpful to see where you are on it. If you guys are comfortable with that.
I mean, I don't know any legally. I mean, is that fine?
Right now?
Like we said last time, like, how many pages do we have now? Because we're just pulling in everybody's conversations. Yeah. We really don't have definitions to put out. But it will get to that point. It's not there yet.
How about we shoot for after our April meeting? Right now, it's sort of explosive with lots of notes everywhere in this way, and it's not honed down, basically. So. But yes, I mean, that's our intent. So. And I do want to say that, you know, it's going to hit the Planning Commission, it's going to hit public hearing, it's going to hit the Town Council, it's going to hit public hearing as well. So.
Any other comments? Anybody want to make a motion? I make a motion that we close the meeting.
Second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
I need to have a class on that.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, I feel like I'm always.
You do.
Thank you. Thank you. I will take good care of these serious chairs.
Judy wanted one too, so I printed one for her.
Oh,
and one here. Judy drained. So I'll print one out and put it.
Okay.
Keep it as a. Well, what was funny was when I started talking about it, I went right to the page and I'm like, yeah, it's right.
Isn't that great? I just love it. Information.
See, I think what happened in communication was that. I didn't have a question. I asked them, give me something I can't. Why?
They can put it on my chair. Thank you.